Shalom and welcome to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. This is a recording of Rabbi Avi Havivi's weekly Sidur class.
We're talking about constructing your own elements to constructing your own theology, your own understanding of God out of the pieces and building blocks that we find in our tradition. So we've been talking about rabbinic ideas about God, rabbinic meaning the sages of the Mishnah and Talmud and Midrash, what we call Chazal, which stands for Chachameinu Zichronam Livracha, our sages of blessed memory. By the way, this has changed in modern Israeli. We always used to say Zichrono Livracha or Zichrona, and apparently in modern Israeli, if you're precise, your zikaron means your faculty of memory in your head. You know, like you got hit on the head and you lost your memory. That's what zikaron means. But remembering them is really supposed to be zecher. So there are a lot of Israelis now who don't say zichrono livracha or zichrona livracha when talking about a deceased person. They talk about zichro livracha, zecher, the memory of zichro livracha or zichra livracha. I'm taking some Arabic. In Arabic, they say when you talk about someone who's dead, Allah yirhamhu, may God have rachamim on him. Sort of a version of God rest his soul, right? Allah yirhamhu. So we're talking about our sages, Allah yirhamhum, Chazal, and their ideas about God. Okay. The last two weeks, we talked about how ideas about God's presence in the world, let's just use that word, or action in the world, are in fact very manifold, varied, and complex. You know, God is this, but God is that. God does this, but God does the opposite. And we talked about these are you know, midrashic story kind of ways. To say, you know, God don't think God is just this, whatever understanding you have of God, don't think it's just that, right? In fact, God, whatever God is, God actually encompasses all sorts of contradictory aspects of God. Okay. So we talked about the last 2 weeks, and following that theme, this week and the next 2 weeks, we're going to talk about revelation. And how the sages' ideas about revelation also are manifold, varied, and complex. Meaning, revelation isn't this one thing, the pshat of what we read in the Torah, God appeared on Mount Sinai and spoke words, and Moses heard the words and brought them down. But rather, revelation, it's our description of revelation must be very complex, which means it's hard to know what it was. You'll see what I mean when I bring you the passage. Today we're going to focus on the revelation at Sinai, which maybe is about the whole Torah. We usually say God giving the Torah, or if you consider the pshat, the simple meaning in Exodus, maybe it's really just the Ten Commandments. Okay. And then next week, God willing, we'll go on to look more at God and Moses and the Torah and what was revelation of the rest of the Torah like. So today we're going to look at one long midrash, which is really a composite midrash, of what was revelation at Sinai like. And we'll see Chazal's attempt to describe it as a very complex phenomenon. And we'll ask ourselves, what are they trying to say in their picturesque storytelling, concrete, midrashic sort of way that we've come to be familiar with? So let me screen share in a moment. I always want to make sure you get the right screen share. Don't show any embarrassing material. Right. You know, like, you know, the list of all my patients, which would be a gross boundary violation. All right, here we go. I always try to close that window before I do a Zoom meeting just to avoid risks. All right, everyone sees it. Yeah, wave a hand if you can see it. Okay, so God's complexity. Again, we're continuing. We talked about God's, how God acts in the world last couple of weeks, and now we're talking about a set of midrashim about revelation. And actually, all we're going to do today is one long midrash from Exodus Rabbah. This midrash and pieces of this midrash are found elsewhere in the rabbinic material. This isn't the only place. And this is a good one that actually brings us together four different midrashim about revelation at Sinai. And they're all based, all these midrashim are based on an understanding of, sorry, I'm scrolling. I don't mean to make you dizzy. Two different verses. One is V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot in Exodus 20, verse 15. I'm showing that to you with my cursor. All the people saw the sounds or voices or thunderings. We're not going to get it in this midrash. We're not going to get into what does that mean to see a sound, synesthesia. That is the rabbis talk about that, but we're not going to talk about that. But they focus on the word kolot. If you're saying God's voice, wouldn't you say kol, singular? Why is it kolot, plural? So that's the grain of oyster. That's the irritant to the sages on which they base these midrashim. The other verse, which I'll come to, is from Psalm 29. We're used at the top of page 3. We're used to singing this all the time. Kol Hashem Bakoach, God, the voice of God. It could mean the sound of God or the thundering of the God. Chazal understand it to mean the voice of God is in power and not bikocho. The voice of God is commensurate with his power. So these midrashim are looking at these two. These are the two verses that they're talking about. Okay. Okay. Job, and actually the midrash starts with Job and ends with Job. Verse of Job, Yareim el bikolo niflaot. By the way, this is a particular style of midrash. Midrashim have different literary genres. Okay. And one particular style of midrash is the midrash author or teacher, speaker, starts with a verse from left field and ends up talking about the parsha. Okay. And from left field usually is from Ketuvim. It's from something in Psalms or Mishle or sometimes Job. Texts that were not studied all that often, meaning it wasn't from the Torah, which was read all the time. It wasn't from the prophets, which were read all the time, as the Haftarot, but from the third division of the Tanakh, which people were less familiar with. So you can understand this was a way of teaching, right? That part of the Tanakh that people didn't always read liturgically. And it'll pick a verse from left field, and then the midrashis will kind of wind around and bring you back to the Parsha. And we can imagine that the hearers of the Midrash, that this was tantalizing to them. You know, you always think of like, oh, rabbis, you know, they start a sermon with either a joke or an anecdote, and you're thinking, oh, how is she going to connect this with the Parsha, right? You're trying to guessing, and maybe it's obvious to you, maybe it's not obvious to you. So that's a literary device with which we're familiar, okay? And this is a literary device with which they were familiar. Start with a verse from left field and then connect it to the Parsha. So the verse from Job 37:5 is Yareim el bikolo niflaot. God thunders with his voice wondrously, marvelously. What's the marvelously part? That's the obvious question. What's so marvelous about it? Mahu Yareim. What is the thundering? Shanatana Kadosh Baruch Hu et HaTorah b'Sinai, hera b'kolo l'Yisrael pilei plaim. When God gave the Torah at Sinai, God displayed his voice wondrously. Ketzad. What do you mean by that? What was it like? Aya, so I bolded kind of the salient passages here. Haya HaKadosh Baruch Hu Medaber VeHakol Yotze UMachazir BeChol HaOlam. God spoke, and God's voice, I will call it, reverberated throughout the whole world. What do we mean by that? Israel, standing at Sinai, they heard the voice coming from the south. So they ran to the south. They said, oh, God's there. We want to go hear the voice close. They ran to the south. Once they were in the south, the voice sounded like it was in the north. So they ran to the north. From the north, all of a sudden, it sounded like God's voice was coming from the east. So they ran to the east. From the east, as you can guess now, right, it sounded to them like it was coming from the west. So they ran to the west. From the west, it sounded like it was coming from the heavens. So they looked up. And when they looked up, it sounded like God's voice was coming from the earth. So they looked down at the earth. And we have a little verse from Deuteronomy about God's voice coming from the heavens. Okay. And they responded by quoting another verse in Job. By the way, again, charming, the imaginative way of the Midrash. Bnei Israel at Sinai, who had left Egypt, who hadn't yet received the Torah. I just want you to get the juxtaposition of this. Hadn't yet received the Torah. So they responded by quoting a verse from Job, right? Which, of course, they had no way of ever knowing, okay? Because it hadn't been written yet. Doesn't matter, okay? So they said, they uttered a verse from Job. V'hachochma me'ayin teitzei, right? They said, where is wisdom coming from? Which means, where is God? Is God in the east, in the north, or up, or down, or whatever? Okay? Some other verses about God coming from the south, okay? So what is the point? What did they come to realize? Exodus 20:15. V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot. Ha'kol ein kativ kan ela ha'kolot. The nation saw, or perceived here, all the voices. It doesn't say voice, but voices in the plural. Okay, so Midrash number one is that it's, we start out with Job saying God's voice thundered amazingly, wondrously. What was so wondrous about it? Well, they ran around hither and thither because wherever they were, it sounded like God's voice was coming from somewhere else, like the Mona Lisa. You know, the eyes are looking at you no matter what you're standing, but far more amazing than that. Okay. Hold on, Michael. Hold on. And how do we know that? Because it says, Roim et ha-kolot, right? There were voices, multiple voices. Now, this is a picturesque midrash. You could say, oh, it's meant to be concretely that, you know, God had, it was, you know, surround, because God can do anything. God made surround sound. You know, there were six speakers, right? You know, like a good stereo system, east, west, south, north, up and down. So you can be very concrete about it. I just want to suggest that perhaps the sages are trying to say something deeper here. Okay. And we'll see how they deepen this theme by saying that, you know, it wasn't like a voice like you or I would hear, which would be airwaves pushing against our eardrum, okay? That would help us locate where it was. But rather, it was a voice that simultaneously was a voice from everywhere, meaning whatever revelation was, when it says God spoke, it is something profoundly different and more complex than when we say a human speaks. When a human speaks, I hear my voice, my wife's voice. She's talking from another room. Okay. I can locate it. God's voice is not like that. So whatever God's revelation was, it's nothing like a human voice speaking to you where you can locate it. It's an unlocatable voice. It, you know, this paradox of something is everything and therefore nothing, or it's nothing and therefore everything. It's everywhere and therefore no particular where. That's Midrash number one. I'll pause. I see Michael waving me down.
Yes, I couldn't help but think of waving the lulav when you were reading this Midrash.
Yes, and waving the lulav in six directions, one of the symbolic meanings, the one we usually say is?
God is everywhere.
Right. I have a children's song on a children's Sukkot CD about, you know, God is here, God is there, God is da-da, everywhere, something like that. Yes. Okay. So, by the way, and it doesn't mean, of course, when they say six directions, it doesn't mean only six directions, but not northeast, right? It means it's their picturesque way of saying it's everywhere. So God's revelation, speaking of voice, is somehow much more, I would just call it complex, okay, than what you think of when you say, I heard a voice. So B'nai Israel hearing a voice is nothing like you and me hearing a regular human voice in the other room and being able to locate it. Okay. I'm going back to my screen share. Okay. Midrash number two. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Haya hakol yotzei v'nechelak l'shivim kolot l'shivim lashon. Ah, actually, God's voice came out and it was like at the UN. It was simultaneously translated into 70 languages. Why? Because there are 70 nations. The ancient rabbinic idea of there are many, 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 many nations and they all have their each language is 70. 70 being a number of completion. 70 souls came, 70 Israelites, family of Jacob came down to Egypt. Okay. There are 70 cows offered as sacrifices during the festival of Sukkot, which Chazal says is for the 70 nations. We're praying for rain for all the nations. So 7 is a number of completion. 7 times 10 means an awful lot. Okay. So the sage's idea of how many nations are there in the world in, you know, that they can imagine in their world, 70. Okay. And it was simultaneously translated. Why? Kadei shiyishma'u kol ha'umot. So that all the nations could hear the Torah, which of course I would like to point out is a totally rabbinic idea found nowhere whatsoever in the Chumash. Okay. Right. Nowhere in the Chumash does the Chumash actually really hint that other nations heard the Torah, right? Simple story in Exodus. Israel stood at the foot of the mountain, thunder and lightning, and they had a revelation of God. So in the rabbinic imagination, no, actually revelation went out simultaneously to everyone in the world, each one in their language. I don't know. I imagine like, you know, in the UN, everyone's wearing their headset where, you know, it's translated into their language. Miraculously, without headsets, God's revelation splitting into 70. Okay. Again, I think you can understand this either in a concrete way. You know, they just believe that, you know, people who spoke Hindi in India were at India at that moment and they heard a voice speaking in Hindi saying the words of the Ten Commandments. I guess that would be kind of a concrete understanding of this midrash. But I think the sages are trying to say something deeper and more complicated than that. And again, they're basing it on kolot. Okay. I'm going to pause. The plural. I'm going to pause and stop sharing so I can see. Well, Larry, please. Question, comment.
It's just a comment. Because I'm also relating it to the fact that they saw the coal.
Yes.
So.
I don't mind if you're commenting, but I said we're not talking about, we're not going into synesthesia today in this class, but go on. Please comment.
I don't think I'm going there, but you can stop me if you think I am. I just want to talk about this. I just want to mention my idea about this different languages.
Uh-huh.
Because when language is conveying ideas or thoughts, whatever. But when you see things, whether it be natural things or a sporting event or something, when you experience it, you don't experience it in language. You experience it in other ways, which you know better than I do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you believe that revelation was God revealing something, not through language, but through visual, auditory or other ways, which would explain the seeing, the kolot, then of course it would be initially translated into various languages. Just like if we were 70 nations stood in front of the Grand Canyon, the awe of the Grand Canyon would be immediately translated as they perceive, as the people perceived it. Mm-hmm. So the translation is in the perception, not in the transmission.
Okay. Thank you for the comment. I will not comment on the comment. I appreciate that. I'll let it stand. So somehow what God is doing at Sinai is not like a voice, like my voice or your voice, but somehow something that contains manifold voices. By the way, we saw a little bit of this in last week's Midrash, right? Like God says Shamor and Zachor in the same utterance, right? The difference between two sets of the Ten Commandments. You and I would not be able to say Shamor and Zachor for about the Sabbath day, keep the Sabbath day and remember the Sabbath day. You and I would not be able to say those two things simultaneously in one speech. God can do that, right? So again, they're trying to say, God said these words. This is something very different than what we think of when we say X said the words. It's somehow much more, again, I don't know what word to use. I'm going to just use the word manifold, which is just a, you know, a way of avoiding explaining something by using a complicated word. But that's the word I'm choosing to use at the moment. Manifold. Okay. I'm returning to share the screen. So that was Midrash number two, translated in seven. Midrash number one, it reverberates everywhere. Midrash number two, translated simultaneously into seven languages. Midrash number three, we won't like this, especially, you know, as we're agonizing about, you know, Purim and all the people slaughtered in chapter nine. Amar Rabbi Tanchuma. Do partsufin hayayotse. Partsufin is Greek, pros opos, which means face. It came out two-faced, which means in two directions, right? Horeg leovdei kochavim shelo kibluha, venotein chayim liYisrael shekiblu et haTorah. The voice was killing two idolaters who refused to accept the Torah and gave life to Israel who agreed to accept the Torah. Now, does this mean like at that moment in time, you know, we know there's a midrash that God, you know, God went around to all the worlds, all the nations and offered them the Torah. And they said, no, we can't take the Torah because it says thou shalt not steal. And we make our living by stealing. And someone else said, no, we can't accept the Torah because it says thou shalt not commit adultery. And, you know, we have what's the word nowadays? Polyamory, you know, free love. Right. So we can't do that. So, But, you know, or does this refer to, oh, at the end time, because the Gentiles did not keep the Torah, they will be judged harshly, because Michael O thinks that, Israel does not have, that Judaism does not have a clear view of the afterlife. But in a few weeks, I'll show you some texts that show you that the sages had a very clear view of the afterlife and what's going to happen to the Jews and what's going to happen to the Gentiles. So unclear exactly when it's going to kill them. Okay. But basically it's going to be the voice is fatal to those who don't keep the Torah. Because once the voice has uttered what the commandments are, if you don't keep the commandments, you're dead. Okay. Whereas B'nai Israel who accept the Torah, we live. All right. Not a very ecumenical idea. So I'm just not going to comment much on it and just let it stand and just say, oh, that's what the sages thought. And it's not a very ecumenical idea. And, not what I agree with. And I'll just let it stand that that was their view. Michael O, you have a hand up.
Well, at the end of the last paragraph, it says in Israel, where does it say it? Israel heard that they're not harmed.
And were not harmed, meaning they heard and they survived.
Which suggests, okay, that they accepted it, but it also suggests, to me, I'm thinking of God as judgmental, uh-huh, or God, you know, versus God as merciful.
Yes.
So, you know, when you, but Israel heard and they were not harmed.
Right.
So it's sort of a precursor to what it says there.
Yeah.
It would kill the idolaters, but the idea, you know, even before you read that next paragraph, the idea is, when you hear it, when you hear that voice, or when you the revelation, when you experience it, you know, it in the way that Israel, I guess, would experience it, then it's not, they're not harmed. I think that's interesting.
Which is nice, except if you're an idolater. That's a lovely idea, except if you're an idolater. Right. Okay. Fourth midrash. Okay. Bo urei heyach hakol yotze. Right. How was the voice? Etzel kol Yisrael kol echad v'echad lefi kocho. The voice sounded to every Israelite at Sinai commensurate with their power, capability, better translation. The elders heard it according to their capability. The young men heard it according to their capability. Children heard it according to their capability, meaning a child would not hear it as a powerful thundering voice. A child would hear it in a way that a child could hear it. Sucklings according to their ability, women according to their ability, and Moses himself according to his ability. Bekol shahaya yachol lisovlo. Everyone heard it. This verse about Moses in particular, but applies to everyone. Everyone heard God's voice in a voice that they could withstand, meaning everyone heard God's voice at Sinai. I hesitate to use the word voice, right? Because that makes it human. Let's call it the sound of God. Each one according to their ability. If you were a strapping 22-year-old, you probably heard it, this seems to imply, much more, let's say, powerfully than if you were a frail 82-year-old. Okay? And if you were a suckling, you heard it differently than your parent. Right? Everyone has different capabilities. Because as it says in Psalms, it does not say Kol Hashem Bikocho, which would mean God spoke according to God's power. Because if God spoke according to God's power, we'd all be dead, right? So the voice or the revelation is adapted to the capacity or the capability of each one of the hearers, okay? As it says, V'chol ha'am ro'im et ha'kolot, right? Not kol, but kolot, plural. And then, because the Midrash has gone a long way, it brings you back to the opening verse, as it says in Job 37:5, Hashem thunders in his voice wondrously. What's wondrous about it? Okay, is that if there were a sound that all of us were hearing, we assume it would sound the same to all of us. Okay, but the Midrash is saying, no. The revelation at Sinai, every individual hears it different, heard it differently, according to their capacity. And of course, this is the kind of thing that this is the kind of midrash that modern rabbis love to use, right? Because they then kind of, I will say, although this midrash is talking about the Sinai experience, contemporary rabbis will want to talk about this as this is kind of a metaphor, right? Or it opens the door for an understanding of everyone perceives and experiences God differently and God's revelation differently, each one of us according to the capacity of our receiving apparatus. It doesn't mean that there's more than one God or more than one revelation in concrete terms, more than one voice. It doesn't mean that there's more than one voice. But the amazing thing about it that you or I, human, would not be able to do is God's voice is such that it can be perceived simultaneously by different people differently, each according to their capacity, each according to their receiving apparatus. So we had four midrashim, one of it about geography, God's voice is in all directions. They try to track it down here and then it's somewhere else. The second one is that God's voice is translated simultaneously into all the languages of the world. The third one is that God's voice is destructive to idolaters and life-giving to those who accept Torah. The fourth one is that everyone perceives the voice differently according to their capacity to perceive revelation. So you could say, again, one could say, the Midrash is simply looking at a couple of verses okay? Kolot instead of kol, voices instead of voice. Why is it in the plural? Or God's voice thunders wondrously. Why does it say wondrously? What's so wondrous about it? You could say the Midrash is just looking at certain words, and they're giving you a concrete narrative story version, which you could either believe or you could either say is a fantasy, depending on your proclivities, as an explanation of what does it mean, many voices. Oh, what it means is it reverberates from many places in the world. Oh, what it means is translated simultaneously in 70 languages. So I will call it the pshat, or the manifest meaning, the simple manifest meaning of the Midrash, is these four concrete interpretations of God's voice is voices. Or you could say the Midrash in its narrative storytelling kind of way, because again, the sages were not philosophers in our sense of the term. They did not talk generally in abstract ways. They talked about theology and ideas by telling stories. So you could say that the sages are using these stories to try to get at a deeper and more significant truth, which is that somehow God's revelation is not, you know, if one of us, if Alan said a sentence and it was 18 verses long, I'd say, I'd draw a box and I'd say, Alan said these 18 words and this is what he said. And he said it once and he said it in English and he was over there in the room. And then the sound waves came and hit my ear over here and we'd all agree on that. Okay. That was the thing. It's possible that what the sages are saying here is, no, you can't say that about God's revelation at Sinai. God's communication or revelation, you can't say, oh, that was the thing. It was this, right? It was actually somehow a revelation that was simultaneously, I'm now going to use a word that they don't say, infinitely complex, variegated, and manifold. And then, of course, that has theoretically corollary ideas, meaning, well, so what are we supposed to do, right? What is the revelation? And we'll look at a passage next week about, you know, the famous passage about Moses being transported by God to Rabbi Akiva's Beit Midrash, and he's teaching, and Moses does not understand anything that Rabbi Akiva says, and the students say, how do you know this? And Rabbi Akiva says, it is halacha l'Moshe miSinai. This is a law from Moses at Sinai. And then Moses is somehow relieved, right? The irony of we're saying that something is handed down from Moses at Sinai, yet Moses himself has never heard that law and does not understand it, right? It's a very complex way of talking about revelation. We'll see some contemporary theologians who talk about this more abstractly, and they refer to it as, what's the term? I think it's unfolding revelation. It might be another term. It's sort of a little bit like all of you is contained in your DNA in one single cell, right? You know, all your cells have the same DNA, more or less. So, and you start from a cell that has one set of DNA, you know, or double set from your father and your mother, right? And the DNA is sort of like the Torah, the revelation, but somehow it turned into you, right? So somehow it turned into what Rabbi Akiva said, right? So what Rabbi Akiva said, which clearly Moses didn't actually say because he doesn't understand it in the Midrash, is somehow, yo, this is part of the relationship at Sinai. And again, another Midrash, which we'll see, right? Everything that every interpretation that every student of Torah ever says, it is all contained within Sinai, which is, of course, in a concrete way, you know, you say, well, what does that mean? So it's an abstract way to say that revelation is extremely complex and manifold and is not just this particular set of words uttered once in a particular way. Okay, it's 8:50. We got a few minutes. I will pause for thoughts, questions, comments. Larry, you got to move your phone somehow because we're just looking at your fanny pack. Thank you. Right. Either look at you or turn off your camera or something like that. Okay. Michael, did you wave a hand? Michael waved a hand. Go, Michael.
I mean, again, I just am brought back to this sort of concept, I guess, of not harm and reassurance or kindness, which I think is almost like and then again, when you talk about what we're going to discuss next week about Moshe and Rabbi Akiva, that he didn't understand, but then he was relieved. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's a sort of a feeling that this is the universality of this, and the fact that this is God. In fact, if you can get your head around this, the concept of what revelation is, and I don't know if we humans can do that, but it's almost like a way of reassuring people that you will find that this is comforting. This is
right. Which I'd like to point out is totally different than the pshat of Exodus, right? Mm-hmm. Which is there's thundering and lightning and it was awesome. By the way, there's another midrash I didn't bring. I think I will next week or the week after about, the people heard God start to say the Ten Commandments. And they said, we can't tolerate it. We can't hear this. Too much, too much, too much. So God said, Anochi. And then they said, too much, too much, too much. So God said, the Aleph of Anochi, meaning a non-sound, right? And that's all they were able to tolerate. And because they said to Moses, what do they say to Moses in Exodus? Okay, this is going to kill us. You go get the laws and bring it to us. Okay, we can't tolerate this experience, meaning the simple meaning of Exodus seems to be it was that the revelation was awesome, cataclysmic, frightening, okay, hard for people to tolerate. They say to Moses, we can't do it. You go listen, right? We're going to die if God keeps talking, okay? And the Midrash totally transforms that idea. By the way, you could ask, how do the authors of the Midrash have the chutzpah to ignore what seems to be the simple meaning of Exodus? But they do have chutzpah, right? And they said, no, no, no. The pregnant woman heard it according to her capacity. The little baby, right? If the little baby would have heard what the 25-year-old man would have heard, the poor little baby would just like freak out. So the little suckling toddler, they heard according to their capacity. Right. So again, what I want to point to is you can understand the Midrash as like, okay, as sometimes people sometimes understand these Midrashim, nice imaginative Bubba Misa, right? Or through storytelling language, are the sages trying to say something deeper than their story, which they don't say in abstract language. God's revelation is complex and manifold because they don't talk that way. They talk in terms of parables, so to speak. Michael H.
I certainly understand the concept of everybody understanding according to their ability. And if you take that and combine it with the comment that you made that there was only one revelation, then as people develop age and become more learned, what was the rabbi's concept of how their understanding evolved? Was it intended? Did they believe that people would evolve and change their beliefs based on their later age?
Well, for sure on a human level, but they would be very hesitant. They would say yes, but they would be very hesitant to say that revelation evolves. So when we read the story of everything a student says to in class was revealed to Moses in Sinai, we moderns would say, oh, what you mean then is revelation somehow evolved, right? Like you came from your DNA, right? And if you would have been fed and watered differently, then you would look different than the way you look, right? We all know that. Yeah. If you were raised, your DNA were raised in a different family, you'd end up being different than you are. You know, twin studies, adoption studies, all that stuff. Certain things would be the same. Certain things would be different. Because things change and evolve. So for sure, Michael, they would say, yes, human beings change and evolve, but I don't think they'd want to jump to the corollary of, oh, that means God's revelation also evolves. I think they would say, no, that aspect of revelation was always there. Now, I understand that it's hard to understand that sentence, but I think they'd want to say that sentence. That aspect of revelation was always there. Follow me? Sort of. You changed. So you understood revelation differently, right? Because your capacity changed. But it's all still part of revelation at Sinai.
Okay. So once a person ages and develops mentally, there's not going to be another revelation, but perhaps from hearing their elders speak, they may perceive the revelation differently than they did when they at first.
Okay, good enough. Right. And then part of the problem in your question, that last part that you said, is you now want to be logical. Okay. You want to have it make sense and be coherent, as opposed to, again, I want to point out the Midrashic style is to tell you an evocative, picturesque story and then walk away, right? Whereas you're saying, does that mean that X connects to Y, connects to Z, which is kind of that's a logical way of thinking. You want it to fit. You want it, you know, unclear to me that the Midrash said that the if the Midrashist is giving this as a sermon in shul, unclear to me that the Midrashist is then saying, does anyone have any questions? Right? And someone will say, well, so does that mean that if I perceive it differently when I'm 70 than when I'm 25, that it's the same revelation, or the revelation changed, or was there all along waiting for me to discover it? Right. So again, that's a question based on logic, and logic is based on everything has to fit together neatly. And I don't think the sages think that way. It doesn't mean they're inconsistent. It just means we have a need because of how we think to let's follow that to its logical conclusion. Right. Which is I want to argue that is a philosophical way of thinking, by which I mean all the I don't know what they'd say in what they call them in philosophy. All the propositions. Is that what they call it? Propositions. All the propositions have to agree with each other and can't be contradictory. Otherwise it doesn't make sense. And if they're contradictory and it doesn't make sense, then that means you got your propositions wrong. Right? That's up until sort of modern, postmodern philosophy, right? You know, where, you know, we don't know where the electron actually really is, right? Which a lot of people don't understand, which I don't understand. What do you mean you don't know where the electron is? It's somewhere. You just don't know where it is. What do you mean it isn't actually, it could be here and it could be there and it's simultaneously in both places, whatever, you know, whatever the Heisenberg principle is, which I don't pretend to understand. But up until then, philosophy is all these things need to consistently agree with each other. I do not think Chazal had that hang up. I think that is our post-medieval philosophy hang up. It's Rambam's hang up. Okay. And there are modern thinkers who say this is Rambam's hang up because he was more influenced. I want you to hold on to your hats. This is Maimonides' hang up because he was more influenced by Greek philosophy than by the sages. And because he was more influenced by Greek philosophy than by the sages, Greek philosophy as he read it through Arabic translation, it all had to fit coherently, right? And that's not how the rabbis thought. It's certainly not how the Bible thought, okay? I mean, that's what we're reading. We're reading about stories that are trying to talk about the manifold aspect of God, of revelation, which means no, you can't say it's this and everything fits together neatly, because that's not a question they ask, I think. Okay, now I'm going far, way above my pay grade here. I apologize. You know, like, I'm not a philosopher. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a historian of Jewish philosophy. I'm just trying to look at, you know, the second paragraph of the Shema. Ava Rabav Tanu Hashem Eloheinu. Hashem, you loved us a lot. You gave us the Torah. Okay, so we love you back. And I'm trying to talk about, okay, what does it mean? What are some of the sages' ideas in the rabbinic era about what does it mean when we say, you gave us the Torah? That's what we're trying to grapple with here. And we will continue, God willing, grappling next week. Stay healthy, be Torah. I'll see you then.
You have been listening to another in our series of podcasts from Temple Beth Am, a dynamic center for conservative Judaism in Los Angeles. If you enjoy these podcasts, we invite you to write a review on the Apple Podcast site or wherever you get your podcasts. For more information about Temple Beth Am, Los Angeles, go to tbala.org.